Well, good morning.
Oh, that's better.
It's good to be sharing God's word with you today. Thank you, band, for just coming in to hear from partway. You just sense God was moving here this morning. And thank you to Claire and the band for leading that. We're continuing our journey in Luke today. Over the last 2 weeks, Andrew and Fee reflect on a number of the Beatitudes. And now Luke, who's ever practical, wants us to see how they work out in practice in the lives of people who Jesus met and who he engaged with. And so today we're looking in particular at Luke 7, verses 1 to 17. And I've asked Jean to read the passage to you.
Luke 7, 1 to 17. When Jesus had finished saying all this to the people who were listening, he entered Capernaum. There, a centurion's servant, whom his master valued highly, was ill and about to die. The centurion heard of Jesus and sent some elders of the Jews to him, asking him to come and heal his servant. When they came to Jesus, they pleaded earnestly with him, "This man deserves to have you do this, because he loves our nation and he's built our synagogue." So Jesus went with them. He was not far from the house when the centurion sent friends to say to him, "Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I do not deserve to have you come under my roof. That is why I do not even consider myself worthy to come to you. But say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I am myself am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. I tell this one, go, and he goes. And this one, come, and he comes. And I say to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he was amazed at him. And turning to the crowd following him, he said, "I tell you, I have not found such great faith, even in Israel." Then the men who had been sent returned to the house and found the servant well. Soon afterwards, Jesus went to a town called Nain, and his disciples and a large crowd went along with him. As he approached the town gate, a dead person was being carried out, the only son of his mother, who was a widow. And a large crowd from the town was with her. When Jesus saw her, his heart went out to her, and he said, "Don't cry." Then he went up and touched the bier they were carrying him on, and the bearer stood still. He said, "Young man, I say to you, get up." The dead man sat up and began to talk, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. Then they were all filled with awe and praised God. "A great prophet has appeared among us," they said. "God has come to help his people." This news about Jesus spread throughout Judea and the surrounding countryside.
So today's passage covers two stories, which, though relating to apparently quite different circumstances, have clearly been linked together with intent. A Roman centurion has a much-loved slave who's close to death. Slaves, despite the name, were often very close-knit members of Roman families. The centurion's heard about Jesus, and he asked some Jewish friends to intercede on his behalf. In contrast, we encounter a Jewish woman, a Jewish widow whose only son has died, and she's on her way to bury him when Jesus steps into the situation. What do these stories teach us for today? What are the practical beatitude lessons that we need to heed? I suspect there are many, but I'd like to focus on four. Firstly, reputation. It takes a lifetime to earn and a moment to lose. We have the phrase from the story of Goliath, "How are the mighty fallen?" Jimmy Savile was in the news a few years ago when it became clear after his death that despite his public fame and his focus on charity work and good works, there was a dark underbelly to who he had been, and which people had been half aware of when he was in the public eye. At a stroke, all the good things he'd done were forgotten. For others, it has just been in a moment. The lifelong ministry of some Christian leaders has been brought into question by one wrong choice. We need to pray for those in the public eye, especially our Christian leaders. But for this centurion, it would seem that his reputation was unblemished. The elders of the town pleaded with Jesus, "This man deserves to have you do this because he loves our nation and has built our synagogue." He was quite different as to how he approached the job of being a centurion to the usual brutal reputation that Romans carried with them. There's no indication that he was not good at his job. He clearly expected those he was in charge of to do what they were told and would have seemed to have a natural authority. What we learn was that he was a man who loved God and who treated people with respect, irrespective of their background and nationality. I wonder how your and my reputation is in the communities within which we live or work. What do our neighbours say about us? Or are we too afraid to ask? What do our work colleagues say? What do our family say? We're called to be salt and light. Do we make a difference? Do we relate to others differently because of our love for Jesus? Do they notice it or even know about it? Andrew spoke last week about the question Krish Kandaya asked of social workers concerning their view of Christians. And the horrifying 70% of the comments were negative. What a challenge to us as Christians today as we seek to follow Jesus in the public sphere. We may be the only Christian people meet on a regular basis. What a scary responsibility. I can recall from my time in Shell of two senior leaders who left, one via death and the other for dishonesty. But in both cases, there was literally cheering in the corridors because of their reputations being so low in the organisation and they were so disliked. I wonder if you or I would be missed from our organisation or our community because of the positive impacts we've had. I wonder what gap we would leave. I hope there wouldn't be cheering in the corridors or the streets. Working in industrial relations, as I did a number of years ago, there was a culture of lying and deceit. I mentioned previously that I told my boss I would not lie to the unions. The downside was I was sometimes used as a truth machine. "You know that Steve will tell you the truth," he would say. But I was able to gradually change the culture. And the unions learned over time in negotiations that when they said something was a final offer, it really was. I don't know why you are being challenged to do things differently. Find the balance between secular institutions and authorities and our Christian calling can be tough, especially in these days. We should pray for each other in our daily walk with God, that his reputation will be upheld and that it will be kept strong. We should seek prayer as we enter challenges. We've sometimes done This Time Tomorrow, where people talk on a Sunday about the challenges they'll face in the workplace the next day. This fellowship is your support team. Do you feel that? No, maybe? It's so important because there are lots of challenges out there. When you come here on a Sunday, you should feel, I hope you learn. I hope you're blessed, but I hope you take time to really connect and connect beyond the chit-chat. The chit-chat's fine. But this is one window in a week where you can share your heart with people. So don't lose the opportunity to do that. In contrast to the centurion, the woman in this story would have had no wider reputation at all. But she was well known to the town. A large crowd were accompanying her as they carried her dead son to be buried and sharing her grief. She was a widow, she'd lost her only son, What? Empty. When my Uncle Jack died some years ago, he'd lived in a working-class community on the edge of St. Helens all his life. He'd worked in the family's butcher shop and then a railway guard 200 yards down the road working in the local railway station. He'd been a member of the local chapel in which he'd worshipped all his life and which his dad had led. Jack was never a leader there. But everyone knew Jack, who was a lovely, gentle, godly man with a huge smile. And as we travelled in the funeral from that chapel past the terraces of houses to the local cemetery, people lined the streets and doffed their caps in respect. Our communities are not quite the same, but you may be touching far more lives than you realise. Because reputation is not about human status. It's about who we are under God. Afterwards, of course, this woman's reputation would have spread far and wide as the person who's suddenly been raised from the dead. And that would have been quite a different challenge for her. But I'm sure a challenge she welcomed. But for Jesus, what mattered in both circumstances was not their human standing, but there were people seeking his help or needing his help. In just the same way, Jesus stands in the breach for you and I too. Secondly, humility and simple faith. As Jesus approaches the centurion's house, the centurion sends friends out to meet him with a message. This is how Tom Wright translates it in verses 6 to 8. "Master, don't trouble yourself. I don't deserve to have you under my roof. That's why I didn't think myself worthy to come to you in person. But just say the word, and my slave will be healed. You see, I'm used to living under authority, and I have soldiers reporting to me. I said, this one go, and he goes. Another one come, and he comes. And to my slave, do this, and he does it." Jesus is astonished. He wasn't often astonished. And comments, "He's not seen such faith like this in all of Israel." What we learn about the centurion is that he's a man who's very comfortable in his own skin, used to hierarchical structures and with an awareness of where he fits within that. If you read the story of the Roman centurion Cornelius in Acts 10, you get a very similar sense there as well. Because in both cases, despite their seniority, they would have been in charge of a very significant area of land, with a commander perhaps 50 miles away. So these were significant roles. There's no sense that either of them were superior. There's a great model for servant leadership here, which is sadly lacking in many spheres at the moment, not least the political sphere. Humility is one of the things a good leader demonstrates. Larry Bossidy, the former CEO of Honeywell, said, "The more you can contain your ego, the more realistic you are about problems. You learn how to listen and admit you don't know all the answers. You exhibit the attitude you can learn from anyone at any time. Your pride doesn't get in the way of gathering the information you need to achieve the best results. It doesn't keep you from sharing the credit that needs to be shared. Humility allows you to acknowledge your mistakes." Humility is not a sign of weakness, but of strength. It's a quality we all need to learn in God's strength and his assurance to cultivate it. For the centurion in this story, it made faith in Jesus very simple. Jesus was his Lord and his spiritual master. Just as his own people trusted and obeyed him, he trusted and obeyed Jesus. Say the word and it will be done. It's really easy to overcomplicate the gospel. At its heart, it's about believing in Jesus and submitting ourselves to his authority, to biblical authority. Sometimes we can be tempted to pick and choose because we find some things difficult to accept. For the centurion, it was absolutely straightforward. He was under God's authority, just as others were under his authority. And what did Jesus say? That he'd never seen such faith in the whole of Israel. Whose authority are you and I under? Are we truly under God's authority?
And what faith is God calling you to exercise? For those of us who have more humanly, it can be difficult sometimes. Woe to you who are rich, Jesus said in Luke 6, verse 24, because following him can mean giving things up. But for those who have less, in contrast, it can be more straightforward. The woman who had lost her son had lost everything, but Jesus exercised faith for her and brought things back. It's a regular refrain throughout the Old Testament of those who wanted to follow God, needing to humble themselves before him, to kneel before him, to lay everything at his feet. In James 4, verse 10, we read, humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. I wonder where you or I need to humble ourselves before God today. Perhaps simply to say, I believe, Lord, help my unbelief. So that Jesus can say he's never seen such faith in the whole of Welling Garden City, perhaps. The gospel call is to take up our cross daily and follow him. As the whole hymn, the old hymn chorus goes, trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. Thanks to those who are closer to me in generation for helping me on that. Trust and obey. Thirdly, compassion. Compassion is defined as a deep awareness of the suffering of another person accompanied by the wish to relieve it. A deep awareness of the suffering of another person accompanied by the wish to relieve it. Photographs of a dead child on the beach as his family fled Syria brought waves of compassionate response. But in truth, it soon died away. There's been a similarly heartbreaking photograph of father and daughter drowned in the Rio Grande on the Mexico-US border this week. Picture those affected by floods or famine are used by aid agencies to encourage compassionate giving. The challenge in this is that there's the immediate compassionate response, and maybe a financial donation, but it's all rather remote, and people soon disengage. In this passage, we have two quite different responses from Jesus to similar needs, but different circumstances. A dying servant and a dead child. Both are compassionate. Jesus hears the voice of the centurion. He heals his servant, but does not invade his space. They do not even meet, if you notice, in the passage. That was what the centurion needed. Jesus accepted his faith and acted. Whilst Jesus' response to the woman was quite different. He meets the woman in the midst of the funeral procession. She may not even have known who he was. I mean, that his heart went out to her. Don't cry, he says to her. She must have thought, what? I've lost my son. This man's saying, don't cry. And then he touches the bier which the coffin was in, or the body was in. You didn't touch biers, they were unclean. People must have been horrified. But then the son sits up and talks and is given back to his mother. And all that angst is swept away. Because what Jesus demonstrated was what true compassion was. We can and we should be rightly moved by TV or press appeals for money for disaster relief. What Jesus demonstrated was what true compassion was. A much deeper compassion than that. This went beyond the wish to relieve a need to being actively involved in the solution, but not with a one-size-fits-all response. True compassion is costly. It's easy to give a pound to a homeless person at the bus station. It's much harder to engage with the person and see if you can help them meet their real need or to link them up with someone who can. It's easy to send a card to someone who's lost a loved one. It's much harder to link up with them regularly over the year or more of grief that follows when they need a listening ear or a shoulder to cry on. It's easy to jump in with a solution when someone shares a problem with us, particularly for men. It's much harder to listen and to stand alongside them as they work it through over the weeks and months that might take. I don't claim to find this easy myself. There are only so many hours in the day, and apparently so many needs. But in a Brexit Britain, where intolerance is on the rise and family structures are under pressure, compassion is needed more than ever. I wonder where Jesus would have you or I exercise compassion this coming week. Who would he bring across our path? I wonder what your response, what my response will be. But remember, it's not in our own strength. We read that Jesus regularly took time out with his Father to gain the strength he needed for his ministry. Times of quiet, times of prayer up the mountaintop. And we need to do the same. We need to pray with others for strength and for wisdom as to where we can help and where we cannot. Our compassion has to be rooted in our love for God and his love for the world and the people in it. If we try to do it just in our own strength, we will burn out quickly. And those in the caring professions I know need an extra dose of prayer and support for strength and wisdom for each day that they are journeying. Fourthly and finally, healing and wholeness. I mentioned last week about our dear friend Maggie, who died of brain cancer, and they're visiting her in her last days. A number of people had prayed for healing for Maggie, had anointed her with oil. But as we sat with her, it was clear that for her, wholeness was not going to be in this world, but in the world to come with her Lord and Master. So we prayed with her for the journey and for her family left behind. In these two accounts today, there is a happy ending, humanly and physically. The much-loved slave restored to his master, and the much-loved son restored to his mother. But I have to acknowledge that for others, as for Maggie, the journey is difficult. Wholeness in God's eyes is not always wholeness as we see it. As part of the prayer ministry team, it's my privilege to pray for people one-to-one on a regular basis, to listen to what they say, to pray for healing and wholeness, often over weeks and months, to rejoice as God answers many of their prayers, and to wrestle with God with them when the answers, a while coming, are not quite what we expected. We always pray with faith and pray that God will show us the answer. Because it's a journey of faith for all of us. But the wonder is that the same Jesus who walked the streets of Galilee, who interceded or came into that centurion's need, who restored that much-loved son to his mother, walks with you and I today in Welwyn Garden City. He's there with us and alongside us. Our final hymn begins, "Are you hurting and broken within, overwhelmed by the weight of your sin? Jesus is calling. Have you come to the end of yourself? Do you thirst for a drink from the well? Jesus is calling. Jesus is calling." Let me pray for you. Lord, you know where we are hurting. You know where we are struggling. Lord, thank you that you call us. Lord, we pray that as we journey through life for you, you will help us hold your reputation high. You will show us what true humility is in our dealings with others. Lord, may we show compassion to those who need it. Lord, may we renew our strength in you day by day to do that. And Lord, may we exercise faith for you to work within us in the lives of others. Lord, you are calling. You are calling. Amen.